Welcome to Afternoon Tea with Richard Wiseman, with me, Richard Wiseman. In this episode, I chat with comedy magician Pete Furman, who is up at the Edinburgh Festival with the Pete Furman Magic Show. And the two of us chatted about the psychology of comedy, Penn and Teller, and also a very well-known magic trick, which is the vanishing bandana, where the magician confuses a bandana with a banana with hilarious consequences. I presented Pete with a lovely spread of cakes and pastries and his favourite biscuit, chocolate fingers, and we chatted easily. Thanks for coming along.
Pleasure.
And you'll see in front of you chocolate fingers.
It's a fantastic array. Well, there's a number of items. There's what are these called? These pink things?
They are wafer biscuits.
Wafer biscuits.
Yeah.
And we got one slice of dry toast with a really mediocre amount of pâté on it.
You know, I didn't want you to get too excited too early on. So, a good festival?
So far, so good. I've a mouthful of chocolate finger now.
Yeah, that sounds like a good festival. Seemingly, that's a euphemism. It's a new show for you, is it?
It's a new show, and it's my third show. And I actually think that it's been the toughest one. The first year I did, I think it was like 130 venue. Second year was like 140, maybe 150. This year's 300.
That's big.
So it's big. Like in previous 2 years venues, anything kind of close and magic-y, you could kind of get away with in that space. This room, suddenly I've had to start thinking about, you know, what about kind of big stage illusions or certainly larger props, you know, and without getting into crappy, tricky box territory.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been fun, it's been a challenge, and yeah, I'm really happy with the show. And like I say, the feedback's been good, so and the numbers have been good, so yeah, all right.
And large numbers, like 300, I always think with laughs, it's kind of a percentage game, isn't it? Because if like 50% of 300 laugh, that sounds like quite a big laugh.
Yeah.
Where if you've only got two people, and only one of them laughs, it's a very small laugh.
Yes. What are you trying to say?
What I'm trying to say is it easier to play a larger crowd with comedy?
I think it's tough, actually. I think it is tough. And also, if you speak to comedians, they'll tell you that they don't like playing kind of a theatre setup. In a club, people are very much crammed together in a comedy club, you know, round tables and chairs, kind of cabaret style. And you'll find that the closer people are together, the more the laughs will roll. They won't feel as self-conscious. And it's just sort of better, and you don't have that. Like in the room that I'm in, the people on the back row are quite a distance away. And because I've got fold back in the monitor speakers of myself, you get a certain sense of...
What's fold back?
It's basically just that hearing myself back. So, yeah, because it can be kind of off-putting not being able to know whether you've been amplified or not.
So you're listening to yourself on stage?
Yeah, and laughing relentlessly. Honestly, even I have to stop sometimes for breath halfway through a gag. I do go out into the audience for a couple of reasons. One for a trick, one to just get punters. Because my show's on at 7:25, and I've done a little bit of presenting on kids' television. And as a result of that, some kids will want to come and see the show, and that's fine. We've got a kind of a no under 14s age limit, just because there's some swearing and stuff, but that's cool.
Which words?
The F word is said sporadically,
right?
Just for effect, because the gag's weak. I think it lifts it, you know. No. So, and consequently, what I say is not to have
What is the gag without the F word? Can you actually give me the line? Is
trombone.
It's trombone.
Not fucking trombone.
That's
it's
funny.
So much
That's
trombone.
Funny. That is funny. That is funny. Yeah, no, you're right. I'm giggling. Yeah.
So I tell the front of house guys not to put any youngsters on the first three or four rows because people that I'm getting up on stage, I want to be able to sort of, suss them out, who's going to be appropriate for what trick. And I'm just cutting down my sort of, you know, my averages really by having children because I really don't want to get a 12-year-old on stage and start flirting with them. It's just just not fun.
And you're a very funny man, let's be honest.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So you could take anything.
Very funny.
Very.
Can I put that on my poster?
Yeah, you're a very funny man.
Professor Richard Wiseman.
Professor Richard Wiseman says, that's right, it's official. So I think I can imagine knowing what will fool people for the most part.
Yeah.
But to know what's funny.
Yeah.
That's harder.
Yeah, you can pick a good trick, you can think that a trick will be great, and if you go out and try it, first of all, the trick, you should never really be trying the trick out. The trick should always fool people you know, at the first performance, really, there's no excuses, because you can practice it at home, and you know you might get comfortable with it the more you do it, but it should fool people first performance. The jokes that you kind of pin on in the routine, or the situational comedy that you try and get out of the routine, is much more difficult to nail. That takes a lot. I find it takes a long time. I know a lot of promoters, and I can drop in at clubs and do 5-10 minutes and take a new routine out. And then when I feel a little bit more confident with it, then I'll drop it in between two solid pieces when I'm actually working, you know, a larger room. Whereas the new material might be kind of a small, intimate sort of show. And then just by doing and doing and doing, it gets run up to speed. There's no quick route, really.
So it is trial and error, more so than the magic.
More so than the magic. But also, I mean, in terms of comedy and magic, I mean, what's fantastic is the two actually make great bedfellows, because ostensibly they're the same thing. You know, a magic trick is exactly the same as a joke. Mm. There's a setup, there's a journey, there's a punchline or a reveal in the case of a magic trick. So they go really, really well together. And there are certain kind of comedic tricks that work well with magic. For example, the magician in trouble is a great plot which appeals to audiences. If they think the trick's gone wrong, if they think that you've screwed up, if they think you've failed, you can get a lot of mileage out of that. And they kind of, you know, it almost takes the sting out of the getting it right, ultimately. Because, you know, magicians are smart asses. You know, one of my favourite quotes is the Jerry Seinfeld quote about magicians, which is, here's a coin, now it's gone, you're a jerk. You know, and that kind of sums it up. So the magician in trouble is an attractive premise, I think. And also, in terms of getting laughs, there is a tendency for a lot of comedy magicians to do similar material. There are kind of, you know, old favourites, A Cut and Restored Rope, A Six Card Repeat, the dreadful banana bandana trick, which is, I won't even bother to explain.
It's not even worth going with.
Yeah, but it's a very popular trick with comedy magicians, and gets laughs, but you buy the trick, you know, it comes with all the patter, all the presentation. You don't even have to learn it, because it's all on an audio CD. So you just put the CD in the CD player and act out the dumb, you know, actions and stuff, and you get laughs. I sort of don't think it's good enough, really.
And with, I mean, you must know a lot of comedians and comedy magicians and so on. Where do you stand on the whole, are people born funny, can they learn to be funny?
I think if they buy the banana bandana,
they can buy funny. Yes, yeah. You can put a price on funny.
Yeah. I think that the best people have funny bones. I think you can learn the craft, and I think that there is no substitute for hard work. And if you really, you know, treat it like a job and write jokes like it's a job. I mean, Seinfeld again. And big Seinfeld fan, but he talks about being at a deli in New York and seeing kind of construction workers going back to the site after lunch, and they didn't look like they wanted to go back to work after dinner, but they were going because that's their job. So he was like, well, I'm going to get up first thing in the morning and I'm just going to start writing jokes. And that's kind of the commitment, really. And I think hard work, you know, people can be funny. I think there are comedians who have fantastic material that get laughs, but they don't have the funny bones, whereas someone can just be naturally funny and have not so great jokes but go a lot further.
I thought to illustrate the whole kind of comedic creation process, we could create a joke.
Oh, now. Okay.
So yeah. I've got like an initial line here.
Oh, this is, you didn't tell me about this. No. This is pressure. Okay.
There's no pressure. Mm. We can edit this out.
Okay.
The chances of that are very slim. two apples.
Okay.
Walk into a bar.
Mm. That's the setup.
That's all I've got.
Two apples walk into a bar.
It already sounds funny when you say it.
That's my northern twang. You can't see this on the podcast, but I've got a cigarette burnt down to the butt. I've got a ruffled shirt and a velvet suit. And a DA in my hair at the back. Proper work. Yeah. Two apples walk into a bar.
Maybe it's just not funny.
Maybe it's, yeah, I think that could be it.
Yeah. is there any fruit that would be funnier?
You know what? Someone once said to me that there are like a banana
is
funny.
There's two bananas walking into a
banana
bar. That's already funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bananas are funny.
Yeah.
Like potatoes aren't funny, but bananas are funny.
There is nothing funny about potatoes.
No, well, they're not fruit.
No, for a start.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they grow in the ground.
Okay, yeah. Two bananas walk into a bar.
Okay.
It's not working. Yeah. You could just throw that one out there and react. Yeah. And just see what you get from people.
Maybe it could be a prelude to the banana bandana.
Eh? So, yeah. You're probably wondering what happened to them. And then you go into it. It'd be perfect. Yeah. Yeah. The only appropriate opening for that trick. Yeah. You got hatred of that trick, haven't you?
I don't like it.
Yeah.
You know the trick, don't you?
Oh, no, yeah. Well, yeah, I had to endure it the other day in Blackpool. Yeah.
I don't think it makes sense. I think it's sort of...
Well, bandana is a very weird word.
I think it's an American thing, maybe.
Yeah.
I think Copperfield did it years ago.
He did it a very long time ago.
Donkey years ago.
Yeah, yeah. But bandana is... That's what I think is bad about it.
Yeah.
Plus the audio track.
Yeah, that kind of... Welcome to the Acme Magic School
of...
dreadful. And, you know... The fact that the magician gets it wrong and it's so obvious that, you know, I just hate it.
It'd be good to do a spoof one of the soundtrack. So you go, welcome to the Acme School of Magic.
Yeah.
The performer you're watching has no talent.
Yeah.
Be great.
Or actually just when it says bandana, you actually pull out a bandana rather than a banana.
That would be funny.
Just do the vanishing bandana.
The bandana. That's right, looking confused.
Yeah.
I like that. Have you got anyone who has inspired you?
Well, two people, a double act, Penn and Teller.
Ah, right, yes.
Well, first of all, you know, when I was a kid, you know, there was four channels on TV, and the only magician on television was Paul Daniels, and he had this big Saturday night show. And, you know, I'm not bad-mouthing him. I mean, he probably is the reason that I got a magic set in the first place and all that kind of stuff, you know. But being... 15, 16, something like that, and seeing Unpleasant World on Channel 4, I was a bit like, well, it just blew my mind. You know, it was like, wow, it can be like this. You know, it can be smart, it can be funny, edgy, really magical. You know, it just felt cool. You know, it just suddenly magic was cool, you know. And I've got... You know, there's no question that I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if it wasn't for Penn and Teller. I mean, they really had such a... I mean, subsequently, I found out that there were other guys in the States doing similar stuff. You know, Amazing Jonathan is another... I mean, I think, you know, he is a very important person in kind of comedy magic, the timeline. But Penn and Teller more so, I feel. And I consider their show in Vegas the best magic show that I've ever seen.
And why? I think it's a great show as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Why, though? What are the elements there?
You know, I mean, I don't even know whether they would call themselves comedy magicians. I think they would just say that they were magicians. But it is funny, and it's not gags in the way that I do gags. It's just, it's smart, it's really intelligent. The tricks, they will fool the arse off you. And you don't feel like you've seen any of it before. They just have a way of thinking. That's just so different to everyone else.
What's interesting about them is because the misdirection is fascinating.
Yes.
You've got two people on stage.
Uh-huh.
And two guys on stage.
Yeah.
And that's very rare
in
magic. I mean, I guess Barry and Stewart have done that.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Actually, it is very rare.
Yes.
And so often you're just looking at the wrong person.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, that's a really strong... I actually, going back to the Markham and Wise thing, who I'm also huge fans of, I actually am fascinated by double acts. I love Abbott and Costello, I love Laurel and Hardy. There is something about that dynamic that's really interesting. And Penn and Teller, one talks, one doesn't. So suddenly, you can't have that kind of two men at the mic doing the double talk, quick fire banter. That's not going to happen. But as you say, the way that they use the each other for misdirection. I don't know. Is it wanky to call magic art? I think it sometimes is. But I think that's the closest thing you could get to it. In terms of magic tricks. But everything Penn and Teller have done, I mean, the Aristocrats thing that Penn did, I thought was fascinating. I love Bullshit, their show on Showtime. I just really, really admire them. And last year I got to meet them for the first time, which was fascinating. And chatting with Teller, I mean, he does a trick in the show with a ball, it's a floating ball. And... I don't know how long it had been in the show, I forget, I think he said, it was perhaps 6 months to a year, fairly, you know, a long amount of time for a routine to be in a show, and he was, after we had a drink and a chat and whatever, he was going to spend 45 minutes or an hour on stage, just continuing to practice this routine. And I just thought that that's just, you know, no sort of resting on their laurels. Mm. You know, they're big stars. You know, they're doing packed houses every night in Las Vegas. But just that kind of, you know, striving for just the perfect trick and just having everything just right. And it is just right, you know, from the way that it's staged, the lighting, the music they use. They've got, you know, live jazz playing for some of the routines. It's just the best. I just love it.
So that theme has come out again and again, that kind of keeping on working at it,
mm.
not being autopilot, not doing the same show again yeah. over the years.
I think that, you know, acts across the board, whether it be magicians, comedians, even singers, I think it's really important to flush in new material, because it's dreadful when you see those performers who are kind of dead behind the eyes.
Particularly with comedy,
yeah.
So I've got two more questions very quickly. Okay. One is a book. You have to recommend a book.
Okay. Well, I thought I'd keep this on the comedy and magic yeah. tip, seeing as though that seems to be the topic of conversation. I really would recommend to anyone the Steve Martin book.
Were you taking a hair off the plate, yeah. the biscuit plate?
Pubic hair.
Was that actually a pubic hair?
Yeah. Right next to my chocolate fingers.
Again.
Sorry,
a book, yeah.
Steve Martin's book, Born Standing Up.
No, I never read that.
Is a superb account of his sort of journey. It is all about his stand-up years. It doesn't go into kind of Father with a Bride 2 or anything like that. Parenthood with Goldie Hawn. Oh, we had such laughs on
yeah,
set. it wasn't Parenthood with Goldie Hawn, it was House Sitter with Goldie Hawn. I just to set the record straight.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all about him kind of, you know, selling guidebooks at Disney World when he was like, you know, 8 or something like that, living in California, and then working at the magic shop at Disney World, and then sort of starting to, you know, just this real fantastic story of a man. You know, there's a guy who obviously is naturally funny, has funny bones, no doubt about that, but worked incredibly hard on his craft, and you know, discovered a way of doing comedy that, you know, dispensed with punchlines almost, really kind of, you know, spun his shows in a weird way and left the audience wondering, you know, what is this? Is this funny? Really went against the grain, and as a result, you know, it was a stadium-filling act.
Yeah, well, you forget that with him, that he played those huge things.
Huge, you know, the Universal Amphitheatre and, you know, 45,000 people, and they would all have the bunny ears and the arrow through the head.
Yeah. And my final question, everyone is getting paid for these podcasts.
Okay.
£10.
Okay.
Now, I know that's probably not the largest fee you've ever had.
It actually is pretty close.
So you get that.
Yeah.
Okay, you can keep the dry bit of pate on the toast
Bless
if you want
you.
That.
Bless you.
How are you going to spend the £10 to maximally increase your happiness?
I reckon...
You can spend it on whatever you want, wherever you want.
I reckon that I might not be able to get it with £10, but I think with £12, mm. I might be able to buy the props and the CD for the banana bandana game. And you know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
And at the end of the run, I'm going to do it in the show.
You should do.
Yeah.
Oh, you must do that.
Yeah.
I want to come along to that show.
Yeah. Okay.
At the end of the run,
yeah.
get that and do it in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll do that.
I'll sneak in the recorder.
Yes.
And then we can listen to the audience.
You know what?
Not laughing.
No. Here's the thing. I guarantee you it will be the biggest laugh of my entire Edinburgh Festival run. That is the sick irony. Do you know what I mean?
And you'll realise that you could have been playing that easy piece throughout the whole run.
Yeah.
Whole run. Yeah.
Why bother writing jokes?
Yeah. And if by the end of the run you've got some ending of two bananas walk into a bar, if you could stick that in for that final run as well. And then there'll just be like a little group of us that have got
You know
the
what? I'm going to buy the trick. I'm going to do
okay,
it.
Okay, do it. Excellent.
Yeah.
Final one. I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay.
Pete, thank you. Where's the show again?
Oh, a little plug. It's at the Cow Barn, which is up at Bristow Square here in Edinburgh. It's next to the Gilded Balloon. I'm on every single night except for the 17th, and I'm on at 7:25.
So if you're coming to Edinburgh, if you're in Edinburgh, or if indeed you want to see Peter, come to Edinburgh just to see
do.
Your show.
Do.
It's worth it.
Do.
Particularly that final night. It's going to be crowded out. You're going to walk out and there's going to be loads of people, arms crossed, just waiting for the bandana. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, mate. Cheers.